I had to tackle everything there was to say about Esther and Mordechai in one shiur, and then we realized we should slam on the brakes. And so we're coming back here for part two. But as I said in the email, I really meant it. This week, I'm excited. I think we're going to see some really interesting things about the growth of Esther and about some of the real core lessons that that has for us and Megillah has for us in general. Just to recap quickly before we open up the source sheet and go into this week's learning, the perspective we really tried to emphasize last week was about Esther and Mordechai being a unit. They're, of course, family members. We saw Chazal from the beginning of this year, linking, right? Mordechai and Esther are kind of contrasted with Haman and Vashti. You know, the pasuk in Yeshaya that we read on fast days, Tachas ha-natzot yaleh v'rosh, v'tachas ha-serpad yaleh hadas, the thorn bushes being replaced by the beautiful trees and the myrtles. Chazal said that was Haman being replaced by Mordechai and Vashti being replaced by Esther. Remember, we saw Chazal had the line when we did the Achashverosh here, and they had that just great dig, that great just rip on Achashverosh. Achashverosh, he's the flip-flopping king. He's the one who, you know, got rid of his wife because of his advisor, and he got rid of his advisor because of his wife. So, you know, out goes Vashti and in comes Esther. Out comes Haman, in comes Mordechai. Not only do they act as a unit, not only are they saving Klal Yisrael together, of course, they're related, they're establishing Purim together, they're working on the salvation together, but even their parallels to the other personalities in Tanakh, we saw both Esther and Mordechai being linked, the Megillah going out of its way to link them with Yosef HaTzadik, the historical personality who really looms large over the Megillah, somebody who they certainly are drawing inspiration from. What does life look like in Galus? What does life look like when we no longer have regular Nevuah, when we need to rely on Emunah Bitachon at times when it's not easy because Hashem's presence is not obvious? The first person to really deal with that challenge and excel at that challenge was Yosef, and both Esther and Mordechai rise to the challenge as well. You want to see a young person living in a palace who's intermarried with the local civilization and yet still manages to somehow find favor with everybody but maintain all their integrity? Yeah, that's Esther, that's Yosef. Finding somebody who rises to become second to the king, is renowned for their wisdom, that's Yosef, and that's Mordechai. So all that whole unit of Mordechai and Esther, the unbelievable dynamic duo, is the real setup for what we're going to begin with this week. Because this week, we're going to see things are going to take a drastic and really shocking turn, because we have to look at yet another comparison or contrast between two personalities, except this one is going to be not something we'd at all expect. Because now, all of a sudden, and here's the source sheet, we need to look at Mordechai versus Esther. It turns out that in Perek Daled of the Megillah especially, all of a sudden, Esther finds herself being contrasted in the Megillah with her uncle Mordechai. Why do I say that? Well, before we even look at the Pesukim, you should remember that Mordechai and Esther, one thing that they really do not share in common at all is that Esther is the quintessentially hidden personality. She's the one who's disguised. She's the one who holds back. She's the one who doesn't tell anybody what nationality she's from. Mordechai, and we'll talk about this more when we talk about Haman next week, God willing, Mordechai is the only major personality in the Megillah who does not have anything to hide. Right? What you see with Mordechai is what you get. He is Mordechai HaYehudi. He's Mordechai the Jew. He's descended from royalty. He comes from the Galus of Yehoyachin. Everybody knows where Mordechai comes from. Everybody knows who Mordechai is. Everyone knows what Mordechai stands for. When everyone is bowing down to Haman, for sure, obsequiously, Mordechai is the only one who literally stands out in the crowd. If he thinks this is wrong, he's going to stand up. Nobody has to wonder where Mordechai is holding on something, what Mordechai is thinking. Everything with him is out in the open. Not a fake, not a show of being out in the open, like Achashverosh, who revealed what he should not be revealing and put on a facade to hide the inner weakness. Not a hidden personality like Esther, who's holding back, who's hiding the same way that Hashem hides himself in the Megillah. Mordechai is just who he is. There is nothing secret about him at all. And in that regard, Mordechai and Esther, and it's I'm sure there's a lot that's said about this. If you think about Esther as like paralleling the Shechina and Mordechai paralleling Klal Yisrael, there must be a lot to say about that. But in Perek Daled, things all of a sudden just, there's a total dramatic rupture between the two of them. The sharpest way to find it is the way the Megillah talks about knowledge in the fourth parak. Fourth parak, this is when the decree has just been passed. All of Shushan is confused. Haman and Achashverosh are drinking. Nothing new on that front. But the Megillah tells us, before anything, Umardachai yada es kol asher na'asa. Doesn't just say that Mordechai knew. Mordechai, the Megillah makes a big deal about this. Mordechai knew everything that happened. With all his connections, we can imagine Mordechai is, he's certainly connected politically. But that's actually a bit of a surprising way for the Megillah to introduce Mordechai's reaction to the decree against Bnei Yisrael, to emphasize Mordechai's intelligence, to emphasize his awareness. Mordechai knew everything that happened. I'm just saying Mordechai Yada. It's Mordechai Yada as Kol Asher Nasa. He knows everything that's going on. Mordechai, as it were, is all knowing. Now, this theme of knowledge recurs again and again in the parak. And let's show how it puts Mordechai on one side, but it puts Esther on the other. Because four psukim later, while Mordechai knows what's happening, and then the whole message gets out to everybody. So the Megillah says, Bechol Medina Medina, anywhere where the information travels, Evel Gadol LaYehudim, the Jews are in mourning, there's terrible fasting, there's weeping, there's sackcloth, Yitzal Rabim, everybody's doing it out in the open, just like Mordechai. Mordechai is wearing Sakba Efer, the Jews are all wearing Sakba Efer. Mordechai begins, he knows everything, pretty soon everyone knows as well. There's one person who doesn't know a single thing about what's happening. That is Esther in Pasuk Hey, when she wants to find out, Ladas, Mazeh ve'al Mazeh. Huh? What? What's going on? Mordechai knows everything. Esther knows nothing. And just to show how this idea of Yidiyah, this idea of knowledge, right, is used in the Perek to put Mordechai on one side of a chasm and Esther on the other side of the chasm, I'm going to scroll down in the source sheet for a second to a few psukim later. Esther's going to tell Mordechai, and we're going to have to return to this line in a few minutes. She says, "Kol avdei hamelech ba'am medinos hamelech yodim." Everybody knows that I cannot go into the king's throne room uninvited. Mordechai, how on earth could you ask me to do something so insane and reckless and crazy? Everybody knows, or specifically, all the servants of the king know that you can't go in. Mordechai responds three psukim later, "Mi yodea." Who knows? Who knows? Who knows why you're here? No. Esther says, everybody knows I can't go in. And Mordechai says, actually, no one knows. Mi yodea. So this theme of knowledge, right? Twice in a row, the Megillah is putting Mordechai on one side and Esther on the other. Beginning, Mordechai knows everything about what's going on, and Esther is totally cloistered and secluded, maybe even has her head in the sand, and is the only person who knows absolutely nothing. And then a few seconds later, Esther's talking about what everybody knows, and it's the all-knowing Mordechai who says, yeah, nobody really knows what Hashem is ultimately up to. Right? So that's piece number one. But it goes much deeper than that. Mordechai is in total sympathy with Bnei Yisrael. It's not just him who's in mourning. It's everyone who's mourning. Every Jew in the entire Persian Empire is in open avelus, with the one sole exception of Esther. Esther is completely alone and secluded in the palace. They're at total cross purposes. Esther finds out that Mordechai is wearing, well, I'll come back to this one in a second. Esther is in the palace, the royal palace, and Mordechai, by putting on the sackcloth, has excluded himself from the palace. And Megillah goes out of its way to tell us this. Vayavo ad lifnei shar hamelech, ki ein lavo el shar hamelech bel vushak. He can't get in. He has deliberately set up a situation where he cannot get in there. So even physically, Mordechai is putting himself in place A, and all the rest of Bnei Yisrael are in place A as well. They're all in mourning, and therefore none of them can enter the palace. And Esther is physically in a completely different realm. So emotionally, they're in a different spot. They're all in mourning and she is not. They are all aware of what's happening. She is not. Physically, they're in completely different spaces. Right? She is in the palace of Ahasuerus with everything that that symbolizes in this moment when he has just passed a royal decree ordering the genocide of the Jewish people. And Esther is alone and cloistered and isolated in that palace. Who are they with? Mordechai is with all the other Jews, right? He's doing what everyone else is doing. And who is Esther with? Esther is with her Na'aros, her Sarisim, she's with her maidens, she's with her chamberlains, her palace officials. It's like she's changed in one people for another. You have the world of the Jews, which is specifically outside the palace, and we can't get in. And you have the world of Esther, which is exclusively the royal officials. Now, when Esther finds out, and the Megillah even emphasizes her seeming erosion of her Jewish identity by saying, when she hears the news, "Batis chalchal hamalkam," it was the queen who was shaken. It wasn't Esther. It wasn't Esther Hamalka. It was the queen, the generic queen. For all we know, this could be anybody. Right? Her Jewish identity is eroding, and we see that because of what she does immediately. "Batishlach begadim lahalbishas Mordechai." Right? She sends clothes to Mordechai to put on decent clothing and to take off the sackcloth. And we got to ask, why is Esther having Mordechai do both? Why is she having him put on the clothing and take the sackcloth off? Now, it seems like it might be an innocuous thing to do. Like, yeah, of course, exchange your sackcloth for royal clothes. But it's actually not at all. There's something dramatic that Esther wants Mordechai to do. If Esther wanted, Mordechai could do both. Mordechai could make herself, but could make himself outwardly expressing clothes which are fit to wear in the palace. Outwardly, things could seem okay. He could get into the palace while inwardly wearing the sackcloth. We know that that's the case because that happens once in Jewish history. That happens in Melachim Beis when it's a little bit unclear who this king is. It's a classic understanding is that it's Yehoram, the son of Ahab, but it may be Yehu or someone else. But there's a king in Yehuda, the king of Shomron, at the time where the Jews of the capital city of Shomron are being besieged, and a woman comes to the king with a lawsuit. It's basically the total twisted inverse of the Shlomo with the baby story, where two babies are or two mothers are fighting because they had so little food that they agreed to cook and eat their children. And then one mother cheated the other mother out of eating her baby. It's absolutely gut-wrenching. It's the Tochacha come to life. When the king hears about this, what's happening to his people? So he tears his royal clothes. Vayikras bigadav. Vayar ha'am b'nei sak al b'sero mibayis. Inside, right, outwardly he was wearing royalty, but inwardly he was wearing sackcloth. And the people are impressed. And the people notice that the king, this king of the 10 tribes, who we normally think of as Rishayim, is actually engaged in tshuva and tefillah inwardly. When Esther tells Mordechai not only to put on the clothing, but lehasir sako me'alav, she wants him to get rid of this whole thing. Bring things back to normal, put the head back in the sand. And we can imagine that Esther probably heard rumors that something terrible had happened. It's impossible to think that she was completely unaware. She's putting her head in the sand. She doesn't want to know. And then when Mordechai comes to the gate of the palace with sackcloth on, batis chalchal hamalka, she gets shaken to her core because, yes, that is confirming something she desperately wants to not be true. And she tries to put her head right back in the sand, sending the clothes to Mordechai and removing his sackcloth. And the last major gap we have between Mordechai and Esther is they are at total cross purposes. She sends clothes, low key bail. He refuses to receive them. Mordechai and Esther at the beginning of the parak are going to be telling people each other to do things, and each one is not going to listen to the other. So we have this, we had, and we will have, this unbelievable power unit of Mordechai and Esther, but the way the Megillah introduces them to us in parak Dalid, they could not be in more different worlds. Esther, who has not been telling people she has been Jewish, seems to actually be in danger of losing her Jewish identity. In fact, not only in danger of losing her Jewish identity, it seems to be eroding and eroding rapidly. She's being absorbed into the Persian world of the palace. And Mordechai, the ultimate Jew, Mordechai HaYehudi, and Esther HaMalka are looking, and we see two completely divergent paths. What does it mean to be a Jew in Galus? Does it mean to be still connected with your people? Whatever happens then happens to you, and that's the world of Mordechai. Or do you assimilate and leave them all behind and go off on your own way? And right now, at the beginning of Perek Dalet, that is exactly Esther. And there's one, I think, real final piece that really, really drives home how far Esther has strayed from her core mission. Because let's remember last week we saw when Rashi on the pasuk of Yaakov's bracha for Binyamin, so we talked about Binyamin being the wolf who comes out early in the morning and then in the evening. And Rashi quoted Chazal that this refers to Shaul, who was the first king of Bnei Yisrael, and then it was Mordechai and Esther who come out at the end of the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, at the beginning of the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai and Esther, descendants of Shaul, whose job it is to redeem the failures of their ancestor, right? That's their real mission. Our ancestor failed, and we have to redeem that. Now we have the long period of the day, the long period of the sun, the long period of Yehuda, the first Beis HaMikdash, Malchus Beis David. That sun now has set. It now is the evening time. Hashem's presence is once again hidden, and that is once again the time for Shevet Binyamin to come out, to come into the fore, and can they repair all the failures that Shaul had when he had his opportunity? So with that in mind, we have to appreciate that there is, and this one I haven't really seen people draw so much, but I think it's very important. As far as I know, there is one other time, four more parallels, one other time that you have somebody in Tanakh where there is news of terrible things happening and everybody is panicking and everyone's crying and there's one person who doesn't know what's going on. And that is in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Dalet. Now, those of us who learned Shmuel Aleph together a couple of years ago should hopefully remember this. The Plishtim fight two battles in a row against the Jews in the beginning of Perek Dalet. The Plishtim win a devastating devastating victory. They're going to march into Shiloh, where the Mishkan has been for over 300 years. They will destroy the city. They will destroy the Mishkan, and they will basically take over most of Eretz Yisrael. It's an absolutely devastating defeat. The leader of the Jews at the time is Eli, the Kohen Gadol, who personally is a man of impressive frumkeit, but a real failure as a leader, and someone whose Yirah Shamayim is really not up to where it needs to be in order to take charge of people all around him who are just totally acting unbelievably inappropriately. So the pasuk tells us three psukim, and we're going to see the parallels begin to come out. So after the battle happens, so we have somebody who runs from the battle bearing the news. Vayaratz ish bin yamin. Okay, so we have somebody who comes from he's a man of Binyamin. And his clothes are torn and he has earth on his head. So we have a man from Binyamin who shows up and he is in public mourning. Right? That's two. Now he shows up. Eli Yoshev al Hakisei. Right, so Eli is sitting by himself, isolated. He's sitting in a chair. The man comes, he tells the news. Everybody's going nuts. Everybody is mourning. Right? We had everybody mourning with Mordechai. Wherever the news came, everybody was crying out. Everywhere, everyone is going nuts. Same thing over here. So we have a man from Binyamin. We have terrible news. We have the people all crying. We have the man, the bearer of bad news, publicly mourning. And then one person doesn't know. One person doesn't know. The whole city. Right? He hears. He hears the cry. And he says, "Me'aya kol amonazet. What's going on? What is this news?" And then finally, the last person in town who's going to find out what happens. And he's going to find out from the man of Binyamin himself, is going to be Eli. So the person who is the leader, the person who, by the way, resides in the real Beis HaMelech, the person who resides in the Mishkan, is so out to lunch, he's so disconnected from what's happening, that he has no clue. And the man from Binyamin who is engaged in public mourning is now coming to tell him what's happening. The leader of Klal Yisrael at the time is the last one to find out of the loss which has happened to Klal Yisrael. Right? And now everything is being replayed again. Now, Chazal have very interesting comments about this, these psukim over here. Rashi quotes it. Rashi has reasons for saying so. I won't go into them now. Rashi says it wasn't just any man of Binyamin who came in. Rashi says it was actually Shaul. He says young Shaul. You know, he's about to rise to become king. Right now, he's just a soldier in the army. And Rashi sees it as young Shaul. Shaul himself is coming and bringing the news to Eli. Now, if we put that into the puzzle, I mean, we really can see the parallel in such an alarming way. We have Shaul who, before he messed up, when he was young, he had potential. Remember, we saw last week, right? He could have been a Navi. At the beginning of his life, he was a Navi. At least beginning of his rule, he was a Navi. Mordechai is now the one fulfilling that role. But who is the leader who's out to lunch? Right? The leader who's being replaced by Shaul, now in Megillas Esther, is Esther herself, the woman who is supposed to redeem Shaul. Instead of redeeming Shaul, we have her, you know, Mordechai coming and playing the role that Shaul once played. It's a total disaster, right? Instead of the two of them being united in trying to redeem the failures of Shaul, we have a total bifurcation in the parallel over here, where Mordechai represents the best of young Shaul coming and bringing the news to everybody. And we have Esther, like the previous failed leader, the one who is completely disconnected, the last one to find out anything about what is going on. And what is the fate of Eli? It happens to be the exact same fate that Mordechai warns Esther she is walking into. Because Eli knows that he was warned one parak ago that it wasn't just him who would be punished, but that his house would be destroyed. And he shall fate as beso ad olam. The family would be wiped out. And that is also the message that Mordechai brings to Esther. And she tells him, if you don't stand up, at ubeis avich tovedu. It's not just going to be you, it's going to be you and your entire household. So we have then this terrible, terrible gap between Mordechai and Esther, those two who are supposed to be such a unit, here at the beginning of the parak, are in vastly different worlds. Mordechai doing exactly what we want, Mordechai doing exactly what we'd expect. He's totally locked in on his mission. And Esther has completely strayed from it. Now, the gap between them, it's so bad. They're not even talking directly to each other, right? They keep on having this Hasach personality who has to go back and forth and bring the word of Mordechai to Esther and the word of Esther to Mordechai. Mordechai then shows Esther, right? So after Esther, you know, FedExes the clothing to Mordechai, and Mordechai doesn't take it. So Mordechai does a FedEx of his own. So Mordechai takes the Pashegin Ksav Hadas. Mordechai takes the physical, you know, here's the letter. And he FedExes the letter back to Esther. And here's what it is. And I need you to take action. I need you to go into the king. Well, just like Mordechai refused the FedEx of Esther, who refused the clothes, Esther refuses the FedEx of Mordechai. She refuses to take any action to go into the king. Now, we shouldn't just like gloss over that either, that Esther refuses Mordechai. Mordechai has been an absolute pole star in the life of Esther. There's a bit of a misnomer about Esther's personality. As I recall, I think Rav Lichtenstein in his article about Esther makes a very similar point here as well. People normally think of young Esther, early Esther, right, as Esther who was passive. The problem with Esther was her passivity. Batilakach, she was taken, she was commanded, right? And that the growth of Esther is that Esther grows from being passive to being active. That's often a way that her course is presented. But it's not actually true, because Esther refusing Mordechai is not an act of meek passivity at all, right? He has been the dominant personality in her life, and she now just straight up refuses him, right? He gives a command, lehagid la'utzavos ala lavala mela. Go to the king, he tells her. And Esther refuses. Not only does she refuse, vatomer Esther lahasach, vatitzaveh al Mordechai. She gives a command to go back to him. So she's not just meekly and limply refusing Mordechai. She doesn't want to go. There is an active component of refusal over here. I think when in the Lichtenstein's article, he points out that what's the curse for Esther here? The problem isn't fear. The problem isn't passivity. The problem is apathy. The problem is the values have eroded. It is easier for her to say no to Mordechai because she doesn't feel like any reason to go. The commitment itself has been lost. It's interesting how Mordechai initially tries to get her to go. Mordechai initially frames the command in a nationalist vein. And what does he tell her? He says, you know, Haman's going to, you should know the money, the deal, you're going to kill the Jews, and then to go in and ask for mercy for the nation. Leschanenlo uvakesh mufanav al ama. Go, not amehem, not ha'am, not the nation, not their nation. Mordechai tells her, it's your nation, ama. Mordechai presumably is aware. He's nervous about what's happening over here. And he says to Esther, Esther, nationalist argument. You are a Jew. And I know I told you two prakim ago to not tell anybody about that, but it's over. I'm withdrawing the previous command. That's your nation. Your commitment, your connection, your loyalty, your responsibility is to your nation, right? And so you better go. Go right now. It's a nationalist argument. And that initial argument doesn't move Esther at all. The way it does, it makes things, if possible, even more alarming. What does Esther say back? And this is the first time that Esther ever speaks, actually, in the Megillah. Pasuk Yud Aleph. It's a long pasuk, and it's long for a reason. So she begins the saying, we saw this before, remember? Kol avdei hamelach v'amdinos hamelach yodim. She's like, all the servants of the king know. So how is Esther identifying herself over here? As one of the avdei hamelach, as one of the servants of the king. Mordechai is telling her, where is your identity of ama? Esther, you're a Jew. Go in, go to the king and stand up for your nation. And Esther doesn't define herself as a Jew. She defines herself as one of the Avdei HaMelech. And look at how many times in one pasuk, Esther talks about the king. The king, the king, the king, the king. Kol Avdei HaMelech. Ta'am Medinos HaMelech. Yodim. They all know. Asher Kol Ishvisha. Asher Yavo El HaMelech. Anybody who comes to the king. Alachatzer Penimis. Asher Lo Yikarei. Achas. Daso Lamis. The law, the king's law is going to be killed. Unless the king extends the golden scepter, I haven't called in 30 days. Five times. You can't make this up. Five times in one pasuk, Esther is talking about the king, the king, the king, the king, the king. Her center of gravity has totally shifted. She now is in the world of the palace. She's in the world of the king. She's in the world of Persia. And she is just another satellite around the king, just like all the Sarisim and Achashtar Panim and all the lackeys and advisors and people who are in the palace. She's just another one of those, right? The center of her gravity now is the Melech, who she comes back to again and again and again. That is now where her loyalty lies. And so now Mordechai has to do something different, right? Now, here's where we see some of the greatness of Mordechai and some of the greatness of Esther. Because Mordechai could have erupted in rage. He could have yelled and screamed and kicked and said, this is you're a traitor. You're betraying your people. Right? He could have doubled down. This is how I raised you. How could you do this? Mordechai doesn't do that. Mordechai does two things. The first is he drops the messenger. Right? Until now, this person, Hasach, has been the person that the Megillah has emphasized, like a person going between them. Right? I'm just going to scroll up for a second. It's the beginning of the parak. So, right, Esther first FedExes the clothes to Mordechai with Hasach. Mordechai sends FedExes back the decree together with Hasach, right? Hasach gives it. Then Hasach sends back a third time to Mordechai. Ah, everybody knows. And then after that, Vayagid Mordechai to Esther, Vayomra Mordechai la Shiv el Esther. Mordechai says to send back to Esther. You see the way the Megillah drops Hasach. Chazal have what to say about this, but in the Pshat, what's happening here is it's as if Mordechai is somehow turning heart to heart, right? We're getting through the gaps and the intermediaries and everything, and he's, as it were, sending a message directly to Esther. That's the first thing that's happening. It's not through some official channel anymore. It's not an official diplomatic channel. And the second thing that Mordechai does is he completely changes the tone of his argument before. The national loyalty argument, that's lost. Now what does he say? Right, and here in Rav Lichtenstein's piece, he really focuses on this, that he gets to the core of what has, he calls out Esther, right, where he says, you think you're going to be safe. If you are silent, we'll be saved. You know, everything in the Megillah is the opposite of what it seems like. Right now, it seems like all the Jews are in danger and you are safe. Right? But Mordechai says, everything in the Megillah is the opposite. All the Jews are going to be safe and you are going to be the one in danger. So first, he calls her out for the apathy. Then, right, he gives a different, and it's just a hint, but he gives a different argument. Who knows if this is the time that you were became queen? And this is the closest that we have as a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Megillah. Probably not surprising. This is actually the only time, this is an amazing thing, this is the only time that Mordechai speaks in the entire Megillah. The whole Megillah, the only actual words we have for Mordechai is a pasuk and a half right over here. This one message. This is the only time we ever hear his voice. His voice is Rebech Batzala Yamo Leidim Makom Acher Mi Yodea Em Leitzka Zosi Gat Malochus. You see the emuna and the bitachon of Mordechai exploding out from the one pasuk that he has. Right? It is a bitachon argument now that he gives to Esther. And Esther, to her infinite, infinite credit, that is the message which she absorbs. That is the message which turns things around. Right? Now the tshuva is going to come. We're going to see the tshuva come in full force. The nationalist, your nation, Jew, loyalty, that doesn't do the trick. But the combination of him calling her out and then him making the bitachon argument, the hashkacha argument, you think it's a coincidence that you're the queen? Nothing in the world is a coincidence like that. That is what is going to land and is going to turn things around. Now, in this regard, here Esther comes roaring back like unbelievably dramatically. And we said before that the goal of Mordechai and Esther is to redeem the failure of their ancestor Shaul. Well, what did Shaul do wrong? He did two things wrong. One thing he did wrong was he didn't wipe out Amalek when Hashem told him to. Instead, they went for the money. And two, more importantly, when he was called out on it, again and again and again, Shaul refuses to do tshuva. He refuses to absorb the Musar. He refuses to change course. He insists on doing what he wants to do, and he always tells himself that that's the right thing. Shmuel tells Shaul, what's the sound of the animals I hear? It's the first chance Shaul has in the story of Agag to say, I'm sorry, I messed up. But Shaul doesn't. He rationalizes and he blames the people. I said the people had mercy on just some of the stuff. Then Shmuel tells him, here's what Hashem told me. Im katona tabenecha roshivte Yisrael ata. You think you're small, but you're one of the leaders. You're the leader of Israel. No? Similar position that Esther finds himself in. Lama lo shamata b'kol Hashem. You didn't listen to the mitzvah. Instead, he went after the money. So that's a direct call out, right? Why didn't you listen? Shaul is supposed to say, Katasi, Avisi, Pashati. Doesn't do it. What does he say? Shamati b'kol Hashem. He denies it. I did listen. I did exactly what you wanted to. Here, I captured the king of Agag, and I killed everybody else, and we just took a few things. So twice, Shmuel gives Shaul the chance to do tshuva, to acknowledge he did something wrong, and Shaul refuses to change course. So Shmuel does it a third time. Yomer Shmuel, hachafetz l'Hashem ba'alos uzvachim, k'shmuel b'kol Hashem. This idea, this theme of listening to what Hashem wants. He doesn't want the animals. He wants you to listen to him, right? It takes three times from Shmuel. And then finally, Shaul gives a perfunctory acknowledgement. He says, I sinned. but now pardon my sin and come back with me and make sure that I'm together with everybody. So, you know, it's like a baseball fan. It's like he has two strikes and then he has like a foul ball on the third pitch. It's the consistent failure that Shaul has to take the opportunities to change when he has them. How many times after this does Shaul have the ability to stop chasing David and acknowledge that he is going to be destined to be the next king? And he never can do it. He never can turn things around. And so we get to him at the end, what we saw with him last week, where he is completely alienated and abandoned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here, Esther, who finds herself in the situation that Shaul's at the end, alone, Shem's not there, there's no Nevuah, it's a time of Hester upon him. But here, when she gets the message, when she gets the call out, she gets the Musser, does she get angry? Does she say to Mordechai, how dare you? I'm the queen. How could you order me to risk my life? Are you crazy? It's one thing, you know, you want me to write a letter to the editor of the New York Times. I'm willing to do that. But you want me to go in there on a suicide mission? And you're angry at me for hesitating to do so? Not at all. Not at all. When the Musser hits home, Esther takes it and she takes it radically. And she goes from being the person who is divided from Bnei Yisrael, the person who's being divided from Mordechai, the person who's being in her own enclave where she thinks everything is safe, she instantly turns everything around. So what does she say? Lech kenosis kol hayudim hanemtzim b'shushan v'tzumu alai. All the Jews are going to fast for me. So it's no longer the mourning and fasting Jews over there and isolated me in my palace over here. Instead, we are going to be connected. They're going to continue the mourning and continue the fasting, except they're going to be fasting for me. The gam ani v'narosai atzum kain. Just like they are fasting, I will be fasting. Instead of a world where you have Mordechai surrounded by all of his mourning Jews, and you have Esther surrounded by all of her, who are they, the na'aros v'sarisim, instead of that, her being surrounded by the palace world, her and her na'aros and her women will also be fasting, right? So she is literally, as it were, bringing Bnei Yisrael into the palace with her. She has reconnected with them. The focus on tefillah that Mordechai has had, right? Esther's bring it back. You know, we're going to bring Hashem into the picture. You know, who's going to save me over here? It's no longer Achashverosh. She's no longer focused on the Melech, Achashverosh. She realizes there's a being far infinitely more powerful than Achashverosh. It is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And hopefully with his help, I will be able to go into the king, Asher Lo Kadas. I'll break the rule. Esther didn't have to say that. We know it's against the rule. But Esther can say she's breaking the king's rule. There's a symbolic piece to that. She is abandoning the world of Persia. She's no longer the Persian queen. She no longer is the Malka. She no longer is one of Avde HaMelech, one of the king's servants. She serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She's connected to Bnei Yisrael, and she's going to break his ridiculous law about not going in to see the king. And if there's personal risk, Bekasher Avadati, Avadati. If I die, I die. I'll accept the risk. I'll accept the consequences. I no longer can hide in the sand. I no longer can imagine that I personally am going to be safe. So the bitachon call out, right, the hashkacha call out of Mordechai, Esther absorbs, and that vast gap we had between the two of them is instantly sealed. And then we go from a world where Esther is telling Mordechai, put on regular clothes, and Mordechai refuses. And Mordechai tells Esther, go in and see the king, and Esther refuses. Where the two of them are divided and refusing each other's commands, what does the Megillah say now? Vayavor Mordechai, vayas gechol asher tzivsa alav Esther. Mordechai does everything that Esther did. They are back on the same page, except of course now the tables have turned, and it is no longer Mordechai who is commanding Esther as to what to do, but when they're on the same page, Esther is the one now who is taking the lead, who is taking the reins, as she really will do for the rest of the Megillah. Right? There is no going back from this point. From this point on, Esther is the one who is in the driver's seat. Mordechai and Esther are together in the front of the car. But, you know, as it were, the beginning, like the first Parak Beis, we had Mordechai as the driver and Esther as a passenger. Then all of a sudden, Esther like jumps out and is in the wrong car. But now she's back and she's in the driver's seat. Okay. Now, it's at this moment that Chazal says something amazing. So I didn't by accident put the first pasuk of Parak Hey right over here. Right? So immediately after we're told about Mordechai doing what was done, what Esther told him to do, so the Megillah says, right? Esther puts on the royal clothes, and now she goes into the kingdom. She goes into the palace. It is specifically that line, I think this is fascinating, about Esther putting on royal clothes, that Chazal say, this is where we see Esther getting prophecy. This is where we see Esther getting the rule. Look, here's the Gemara. Esther, how do you know Esther is a prophet? Tichsiv, prophetess, vayhi bayom hashlishi, vatilbash Esther malchus. Esther wore royalty. Says, what does it mean? Big day malchus mibayale. Should say she wore royal clothing. What do you mean she wore royalty? You can't wear royalty. You are royalty. You wear royal clothes. Ella shelavsha shelavashta ruach hakodesh. Rather, says the Gemara, right? She was surrounded, as it were. She was dressed with ruach hakodesh. So, what's the malchus that Esther has here? The Gemara is saying it's not royal clothes. It's not Persian royalty. It's not Achashverosh royalty. It's the real thing. It's Hakadosh Baruch Hu. It's the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. It's the Shechina who has come back to be with Esther, right? The whole world of Hester Panim we had, this is the moment where that is beginning at least to fade away. You know, we talked last week about Shaul. He begins his life, he begins his career as a Navi, first becoming a king. And he, Shmuel says, you're going to meet these students who are becoming Navim. You're going to get prophecy. It happens. Everyone's amazed. Hagam Shaul ben Navim. The unbelievable potential that Shaul had. He could have been both a king and a Navi. By the end of the story, he's no longer a king, and he's no longer a Navi. Hashem will not answer him. There are no Ruach HaKodesh, no dreams, no Metumim. He goes to the woman from Ein Dor to revive the dead because he can't get a message from Hashem. Totally lost it. And Esther, we have right here in this moment, the opposite trajectory. We have the redemption of Shaul. She takes the Musar. She takes the personal risk. She does what Hashem wants, even though it's not what she wants. And the Ruach HaKodesh, now Chazal say, comes back. At that moment, she puts on that sacrifice, Batalbash Esther Malchus, not Malchus with a lowercase mem, but Malchus with a uppercase mem, right? And she puts it on the line for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. Hashem comes back to be with her. Now, we should appreciate that it is not easy for Esther. We should appreciate what it means. We just talk like lightly about, oh, the emunah and bitachon of Esther. It's not something which comes easy, because even if she's getting Ruach HaKodesh and Parak Hey Pasuk Aleph, she still does not have the tangible constant feeling of Hashem being with her like we have previously. And Chazal draw this out with one incredibly powerful medrash. So the Berak and Tehillim, Lamanatzeach al Ayelas HaShachar, Rashi on the spot will tell you Ayelas HaShachar, which they translate as, what the, I don't know what this is, but probably neither did they. So Ayelas, right, as a doe, and the doe of the mornings, they say that is Esther. Why is that Esther? Well, the beginning of the Parak is pretty depressing. Kaili Kaili Lama Azavtani. Hashem, why do you abandon me? Rachok Mishuasi Divrei Shagasi. Right? There's no answer to my cry. There's no hope of redemption. Okay, Ekra Yom Lo Sane. I call out in the morning, in the day you don't answer. V'laila Lo Dumyuli. At night, but there's no rest for me. In the good old days, Becha Batru Avosenu. Right, in the old days, our fathers had trust in you, and you delivered them. But now, I'm not seeing this happen. The Gemara says, actually, this is one of the two sources for reading Megillah and day and at night. It's the Gemara in Daf Dalet and Aleph right here, Shuba Levi. A person's reading Megillah at night and during the day, because Elokai Ekra Yomam Velo Saneh. I call out in the day, and you don't answer me at night, and I get no rest. The idea here being one of the themes of the Megillah is, yeah, there's redemption, but it still is a redemption of Hester Panim. But the Medrash Shochet Tov has just a unbelievably powerful and tragic capturing of Esther's emotions in this moment, right? So, Kaili Kaili Lama Azavtani, what does it mean, Kaili Kaili? So the Medrash says, you were my God at the Yamsa, you were my God at Sinai, when Hashem opened himself, revealed himself openly. Lama Azavtani, what does it mean, you left me? Lama nishtanu adlai sidro shel olam. This is Esther talking. Why are things different for me? Vesidurin shel imo. So let's look back at the way things were. Ma'imenu sara. Al yidei shenishbis al paro laila achas. One little measly night. Sarah is captured and is in the palace of Paro. What happens as an immediate consequence? Laka hu v'chol beso. Paro and his whole entire household, right, are met with overwhelming, miraculous divine force immediately. Shemar v'raga Hashem es Paro. Ani, says Esther, Shani nisuna besochi ko shel oso rasha kol hashanim halalu. I am stuck together with Achashverosh year after year after year after year. Ein ata oset ivi nisin. And yet you do not do any miracles for me. Esther, at the time of the end of the period of Tanakh, looks back at everything that's happened in the past and says, where are the nisin? Where is the Yeshua? Now the Gemara said that there were seven neviot. The first one was Sarah, and the last one is Esther. So Esther said, okay, you know, everything's a circle. Look back to the beginning. It's not the first time in Jewish history we've had a prominent Jewish woman who's stuck in the palace with some debased king. But where's my miracle? Where's my miracle? It's not there. It's not there. And yet, despite all that, right, despite the fact that we do not have the full Geula, the full redemption, that we don't have Hashem openly revealing himself and throwing Makos around and taking us out, you know, Yad Chazakav Zranitu, yeah? Nonetheless, Esther is still able to maintain her Amuna, that Hashem is there, even when he's not obviously there. And that is really the lesson of Esther for all time, right? She has the tshuva, she has the total redemption of all the mistakes of Shaul. She does exactly what she's supposed to do. And even if she doesn't get everything that she hopes for, she's still locked in. Now, there's one piece that really, I think, captures the growth and the way things change with the dynamic of Esther. And maybe one way to think of the reward that Esther does get. You know, the Medrash Shochet Tov is saying Esther didn't get the hope she had in that tefillah. But here's something that Esther does get. Megillah tells us, right, at the beginning, we're first introduced to Esther. So Esther wouldn't tell us who she was. That's Ma'amor Mordechai Esther Osa. She did Mordechai's commandment. Exactly, Kasher Hesab Amna Ito. She was raised a certain way, so she fulfills, she fulfills his command. Ma'amar Mordechai. Well, what is the reward for Esther? So the way the Megillah describes the institution of Purim, that's really interesting. So the Megillah tells us, how did this happen? So first it was Vatechtov Esther Hamalka Bas Avichail, right? So she's the queen, but she's Esther Bas Avichail, right? Her Jewish lineage is all there. Mordechai HaYehudi. The two of them are back, right? The dynamic duo is back in action. The two of them wrote this up. L'kayim es igeres ha-Purim hazos ha-shenis, the second letter of Purim to be established. V'yishlach tzvarim el kol ha-Yehudim. Sounds like, first, Esther is the one who writes it at first, right? It's Vatichtov Esther. But then Mordechai sends the letters, Vayishlach Sifarim, to fulfill this. And then Kasher Kiyam Alehem Mordechai Heyudi VeEsther Hamalka. So it's like everything is blended. You know, Pasuk Chavtes, it's Esther and Mordechai. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, it's Mordechai and Esther. She's doing the writing. He's doing the sending. Everything is a total blend, a total team, and it's beautiful. But then Megillah lets us know something surprising. Uma'amar Esther Kiyam Devrei HaPurim Ha'ela V'Nachtav V'Sefer. The commandment of Esther was confirmed and was fulfilled. So on a literary level, we just see a beautiful closing of the circle that Megillah does. Esther begins her career by fulfilling Ma'amar Mordechai. And the ultimate reward for that is by the end, everybody is fulfilling the Ma'amar Esther, right? The commandment of Esther. Rashi jumps onto this, and I want to look at the Rashi for a second, and then we'll look at the Gemara for a second, and then we'll finish this year. So Rashi says, what is this Ma'amar Esther Kiyim? So Rashi goes to Chazal and say, Esther Bikshim Eischach Me'ador Lekav Av Lechtov Sefer Ezem Shar Ksuvim V'zeh V'nachtav Sefer. What's happening here is Esther is demanding that the Megillah be written up and put in Tanakh. Right? Now, why does Esther have to demand that? Well, it's not obvious this should be in Tanakh, I don't see the open nisim in a flow, so I don't even see the shame Hashem. Esther is the one who has the real appreciation, right? She's the one who says, no, there is a miracle here. There was a Yeshua. This belongs in Tanakh. And the very same Esther who can say, Kaylee, Kaylee, Lama Azavtani, why are things not the way they were? Sarah was saved instantly, miraculously. And I am not. Year after year, I'm still here in this stinking Persian palace. That very same Esther, who is still living with the suffering, who is still living and reminded every waking minute of the fact that Hashem is not with her in the way that she would want, in the way that he has been with us in the past. Esther specifically is the one who still can say, no, this is still a geula. We still sense Hashem's hand, and this absolutely belongs in Tanakh together with all the other Nevi'im. Now, the Gemara that Rashi is referencing, Gemara Megillah Daf Zayin, I think it just puts one final piece in the puzzle, one final piece in the total redemption of Esther. You want the Benahapahu, so her going from the person who was seduced and absorbed by all of the riches and allure of Persia and the excitement of being the queen, to the person who totally turns her back on it, right? So let's remember, you know, Esther had said, well, I can't break the laws of Persia, but the Das HaMelech, I'm going to go against the law. Are you crazy? I can't do that. What does Megillah say right here? How does it read the last Mam or Mordechai Esther? I'm Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Shalchalam Esther L'chacham. So Esther sends a letter to the Sanhedrin. Kavuni L'doros. Right? My story should be put down for all time. I want this in Tanakh. Shalchula, they sent to her, Kina at me'oreres aleinu l'bein ha'umos. But you are going to get all the other nations all around all jealous. We were lucky enough, okay? We got this, Hashem gave us this this one victory. Well, we're going to have this all time. Every single year, everyone's going to be reminded about what we do. We're going to rub into everyone's face how many enemies we killed. Presumably those 75,000 enemies we killed, yeah, a lot of relatives. And those relatives don't like the Jews very much either. We're going to celebrate this openly every single year. I don't think we can do that. We need to put our heads down. We've got to be better gullus Jews. You know, we got to just stick to the expectations of the society and try to blend in and not stand out so much. Okay, we'll read Sefer Yoshua and Sefer Shoftim. We don't need a Megillas Esther to rub in everyone's face every single year. Esther says back to them, no. Shalcha lehem. Fark suva ani al divra hayamim l'malchei madayu paras. I've just transcended that. Okay. I don't need to be afraid of you. I don't need to be afraid of them. I'm even written in their books. Right. So she goes from being the person who says, I'm awed by Persia. The king, the king, the king, the king. I'm awed by the king. I need to do what he says. I need to follow his laws. And Mordechai says, no, you don't. Now the tables have totally turned. Esther is not afraid of Malchei Madai Paras. She says, I'm in their books, okay? I've beaten their world, and now I'm telling you, Kivuni Ladoros, we are going to do what we think is appropriate. We're going to do what we think is right. And if we think the way we should respond is to acknowledge the miracle that Hashem did for us, we should acknowledge the Geula, acknowledge the Hashgacha, and do so with a Yontif for all time and a Megillah for all time. We are going to do that. And the idea that we're going to be held back because of some concerns of what some other people that in the Gullus that we're in, what they're going to say, absolutely not. No way. We're doing what we think is right. We're not going to worry about anybody else. So the exact argument, right, that Mordechai had to make to Esther before she has to turn around to Parak Dalid, Chazal now are saying that is exactly what Esther does to the Sanhedrin at the end of the Megillah. So it really is, right, a full-fledged Vinahafahu, the total heroine of Megillah. And then the two of them, Mordechai and Esther, right, they begin as a team, and there's the break, but it's her turnaround, which really fuels the greatness of Megillah, the greatness of Esther, and hopefully provides us with a role model that we really look to as we daven every day for the Argalas to attend. So next week, we'll do a Haman and a Malik Meretz Hashem. So definitely looking forward to that. So we can come back.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much. Thank you, Yasha Kaka.